Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer. Our guest today is a member of both the Poker Hall of Fame and Gamblers Hall of Fame, Dewey Tomko. A former kindergarten teacher, Tomko has been playing professional poker for almost 50 years. He has won 3 World Series of Poker bracelets and is noted for 2 runner-up finishes in the World Series of Poker main event. His tournament winnings are just under $5 million. It's been said that he's gambled at golf for more than $1 million more than once. Dewey Tomko, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Okay, how you doing? Glad to be here.
Thank you. We're very glad to have you here.
Who am I speaking to, Bob or Richard?
I'm Bob.
Both of us, and I'm Richard.
Okay, good. Okay, got it.
It's not obvious that golf and poker are very similar to each other. But a lot of very proficient poker players also play and gamble at golf. What do they have in common with each other?
Biggest thing is, you know, it's just to gamble. That most people just do. Are you talking about gamblers like us, or are you talking about a professional golfer and a professional gambler? Which one?
I'm talking about professional gamblers who also gamble at golf.
Okay. Well, the biggest thing is they just need excitement, and they just, most professional gamblers, you know, want to gamble on everything, anywhere from sports betting to, you know, some of them even play blackjack and craps, and they just have gamble in them, and it's just another form of gambling, another way of thinking they got an edge, whether they have one or not, and most games are done around a poker table. You sit around the poker table, you start talking about this and that, and whether you want to go shoot basketball hoops for a lot of money or play golf or shoot pool, but mainly it's golf. Get away from the tables a little bit. And the reason you have to gamble so high is, and people ask me, how do they get these games so high? Well, you got to look at it this way. You're sitting there in a poker room where maybe you can win, you know, $400,000 or $500,000 to $1 million playing poker. It's, 115 degrees out. You're eating milkshakes and hamburgers and watching the game and betting on every game. And now somebody says you want to go to the golf course and play golf. Well, what are you going to do? You ain't going to go play a lousy $10,000 Nassau, take 5 or 6 hours out in that heat, and get away from all the facts. So the reason they play so high is when they leave those tables is the fact is that, you know, they have to have a certain amount to leave. You know what I mean? It's not worth their while to just say, hey, we're going to go play golf when they can sit there and play poker in an air-conditioned room. Watch the games on TV, bet them, eat. It's a very, easy, relaxed job. So to go to the golf course, they have to bet something like at least $50,000 Nassau to get their interest. So that's how golf is high, whether you're a good player or not. It's just circumstances.
How do you find the young players today compared to the old timer? When you came up with Doyle and Puggy and all those guys, how do you find the younger players today compared to them? Do they have that same amount of gamble, and are they out there betting it up on the golf course too?
Not really. There's a few of them, you know, like Phil Ivey and, you know, Daniel, E-Dog. But most of them are more like they're more selective. When we came up, basically, we had to learn how to play every game because there wasn't that many games. So there was a good game going on. Say it was Omaha over there in the corner. you had to know how to play Omaha because it was the only game. If you was seven cards, whatever the best game was, when I say the best game, where you can make the most money, you had to be able to play it. Nowadays, I think they're a little bit spoiled. The fact is there's so much hold'em going on that they, some are just basically, you know, hold'em players and don't even know how to play the other game. Not all of them, I mean, but generally speaking, they're like, the only way that can make money is it's a hold'em. And because of the fact that when you're, you know, a gambler like we were, anything, it could be football, it could be golf, anywhere you can go out and make money, you thought about your hobby was making money more than it was playing poker. You know what I mean? I'll describe it to you, how you make money, whether it's whatever circumstances or other. But the kids are different nowadays. They're way smarter. They're way, way, way better tournament players than I think we were because we didn't play that many tournaments. Side games, I think there's a lot to be learned. They miss a lot because they play so much tournament poker that they don't know how to play the flop so good because, you know, it's just all usually move in before the flop or move after. So a lot of the creativity that happens in a side game where you see the flop and have to bet, I think they're a little short on that end. Not all of them. I'm just saying the ones that just play tournaments.
Yeah, you kind of I think rather famously said that you had never read a book on poker. Is that still true? You learned it by doing it.
Yeah, I've never read a book on poker. I mean, I think people should read them. But basically, I think poker is trial and error. You go in there and you my kids ask me how to play poker. I can tell them how to play a hand, certain statistics. But everybody has a style. It's like golf. There's a million ways to hit a golf ball, and there's a lot of ways. Everybody, what works for your personality and what works for you to win, that's the key. Like you might play a guy like when I used to play Stewie a long time ago. Stewie was a complete opposite player. I mean, he played every hand aggressive. I was more of a tighter player. At the end of the day, we're both heads up at the table to win tournaments. It's just you have to develop what style make you win. You know what I mean? So it's more like if I was to tell somebody how to play poker, I mean, you can educate them as much as you can about odds and stuff like that, but you just got to get in there and play and figure out how to win. It's about how simple it is.
But in the beginning, I heard that you drove out to Vegas in luxury cars and drove home in jalopies getting those lessons that in the early days.
No, I didn't go out in luxury cars. I went out in jalopies and come home in jalopies. No, in the beginning, ever since I came to Vegas, I basically won. It's just in the early 70s, the stakes weren't very high. You know what I mean? So you could, if you found a 5-10 and a quarter game or a 5-10 blind no limit game, that was a lot. You know what I mean? So, the expense, I used to go out to when I taught school, I'd come out in the summertime. And I'd play for like 3 months and then take off school and come out for the World Series. It wasn't that many tournaments in those days, it was just the World Series at that time. So, I have drove a jalopy back home once all the way from Vegas to Florida.
Billy Baxter was on our show not too long ago, and he told some stories about a group of players playing golf with poker and drug kingpin Jimmy Chagra way back in the 70s. Were you part of that group?
Yeah, I used to play Chagra all the time. I can tell you a good story. You want me to tell you a good story about Chagra?
That's exactly what we want you to do.
So I'm playing down there. Chagra, I was the first guy to meet Chagra. He was playing in the Golden Nugget, playing cheap poker down there just for something to do. And he got to liking me. We were just playing poker back and forth. And every time he'd show up, I'd show up. And actually, he was a loose player. So he asked me to go play golf a couple times. And like an idiot, I didn't go play with him. And I said, well, we're playing poker. I never thought that he was a big gambler on the golf at the time. So I didn't go play with him. I could have been the first one to beat him out of a lot of money. So anyhow, I come back like 5 months later. I had to go back and teach school. And I come back. And here I find out that he's out there blowing millions of dollars a day playing golf, and I didn't take him out there. So by the time I got there, they already cleaned his clock pretty good, and he was a little more educated. But I used to play a lot of golf with him, and and you know, he was a million-dollar day guy, easy. He'd just play everybody, and a lot of interesting things they did to him. Did Billy tell you about how they inflated the what they did to the golf ball with him?
Tell us about it.
Huh? He didn't tell you that. Well, they had they were out there. This was the old timers. I mean, we used to play. I mean, people we played golf with in those days were like him. I mean, every hitman out there. I mean, anybody that had cash. You know what I mean? Old bookmakers that couldn't do nothing with their money. Just, you know, that's just the way it was when you played golf. So what they had, a lot of, you know, thieves and thugs at the time. You'd make a match, and the next, I learned not to leave my golf clubs at the golf course overnight. I'd come back, there'd be clubs missing, bent, anything that they'd do to get an edge, you know what I mean? So anyhow, this is very unique. So we had a tournament out there. Jack Binion used to have the Gamblers Golf Tournament, and we would meet every year out there. So Shagra, I don't want to mention the names who did it, because they're dead, but what they did was, the old Titleist golf balls, if you remember, just they were liquid inside, you know what I mean? Old Titleist Bellotta. Well, what they did was, how ingenious some of these guys were. They're out there playing for, you know, a couple $1 million, you know, a total $100,000 in assholes, four or five guys. They had a, Shagra had a girlfriend, and they paid her. And she was getting about $5,000 a day. This guy used to just throw money away. When he played dice at the Vineyard's Horseshoe, he would just throw $30,000 and $40,000 over his shoulder at times. People just, so he liked to watch people, you know, chase after it, just give it away.
Bet.
Anyhow, I don't know what he knew or not, but anyhow, he was a nut. But anyhow, he had all this money, and he knew he was going to jail, and he was just trying to destroy it. So anyhow, this girl, he was giving like $5,000 a day to her. And the guys got to her, and they said, listen, you got to put these golf balls and give them to Shagra and make them play with them. And what they did was, they got a hypodermic needle. They put mercury in a hypodermic needle, and they shot it into the middle of the ball. And which what it does, it almost like putting dirt on the ball, and made it the metal, when the ball would go, it would go right and left, it would go just dive, you know, dive right and dive and left, and they and weighted the ball. So it pretty, and you couldn't see it, but they put a hypodermic needle with mercury in it and shot it right into the ball. So every time you hit a golf ball, I mean, it just never could go straight. It either go right, way left, nose dive like a drop of a baseball. Anyhow, they did all that to beat him out of his money. They was going to beat him out of anyhow. They just didn't take any chances.
How about
the old
Jay
gamblers?
Sarno? Did you get to play with him too? Jay Sarno?
Who?
Jay Sarno?
No, I never did play with Jay. No, he was before my time. But they, I know they used to do the same thing to him. He couldn't see. They just used to drop balls on the side of the green, and, you know, they just swing, and he couldn't see it, so they just said they hit a good one. That was a bad day. Those were the bad guys. Gambler's not like that anymore. I want to let you know. They used to do so many things to me. I was so innocent when I first went out there. They'd have guys, I did golf balls at the old Tropicana, go look for my golf ball, be gone. I hit it right down the middle of the fairway. They had guys out there, you know, out in the front. You couldn't see them. They'd go steal your balls and run the woods. It was brutal in those days. But it's cleaned up after that. You know, that was in the early 70s. That's when, what's his name? It's the guys from the casino. Blacho guys were around. You know, it was brutal. I mean,
did you have any run-ins with
a lot of bad things going on? Yeah, I had a few of them. Yeah. When I first went out there, well, I was kind of like a goose. I don't know how to describe it to you. I was making money playing poker, and whatever I did playing poker that night, it was almost like it was a leak in the cage. If I won, like, say, $7,000 that night, which, you know, those days was a lot of money, they'd take me the next day and beat me out of it in the golf. My first 4 or 5 years playing golf, I never won a match. I'd choke. I eventually found out how to win, but in the beginning, they used to keep me broke playing on the, you know, on the golf. But he'd have all kind of people. You know, he'd give you a partner, and partners would tank you. But what he did to me one time was, it was what he used to do in the old days. I guess you probably already know this, but I'll tell you anyhow. They used to go when, I guess they were unfavorable with the mob at that time or something was happening, whatever happened. But they would come to the poker players in those days and say, hey, you got to give me 25% of your money or your winnings, or you either got to leave town or we're going to, you know, put you in the desert. They used to just tell you that. So that's, you know, I was like a small, they used to do the Doyle. I mean, we had some big confrontations, Doyle, Sarge, Eric Drake, Chip. It was some, I was, at that time, I was a small player. They didn't really bother me too much because the fact is that they were more after the bigger guys, and they won like 50% of what they won. But anyhow, basically, you know, I finally went back to Florida because I had to go back teaching anyhow. And by the time I got back the next year, I think they already put him in the grave. So I don't know.
Now, a lot, you know, you have a tremendous reputation as a golfer, being able to perform under pressure and playing about as high as anybody plays. But those are also the same things that get said about Billy Walters. And I'm wondering, if you play with Billy, which one of you gets the money?
Well, listen, me and Billy have been gambling at golf since I was in my 20s. I used to go to, I met him at, you know, Binion, I mean, Jack's golf tournament. And we probably gambled to go each other, God, forever. Oh, I used to go to Nashville. I mean, he lived in Louisville at the time. I used to go there, and we'd play $50,000 assholes even in the late 70s, and then he'd come out. We've been gambling at each other heads up for, God, I don't know how long. And I don't know who's got the best of it. It's a pretty tough deal. But the first time I ever won $1 million on a golf course, he was my partner. So, actually, so we've actually, Doyle used, it's like Doyle. Doyle's probably the highest. He's by far the highest golf gambler. He won more money than Tiger Woods ever thought about winning. But Billy's, you know, way up there too. But the, Billy is, you know, they're just tough competitors. And what happened was, like, Doyle used to keep me broke for the first 4 or 5 years when I didn't know what I was doing on the golf course and choking. When I finally got where I could beat him, we joined. We became partners. That's what happened to Billy. They, once they find out you can, you know, that you're, now you can beat them, now you're their partner. You know, you go beat other people. Doyle was a beauty, buddy. Every time I got a quarter, from playing poker, I just couldn't wait to give it to him on the golf course, but or Billy. But then I finally wised up. I'll tell you a story.
You know, it's funny because when I interviewed Chip Reese, he basically said the same thing. Whenever he got money in the first few years, he was going to Doyle and Jack Binion, often on the golf course.
Yeah, it was something. They used to sit there and, well, what happened was, they had all this money and this greed. The biggest thing about gambling and poker player, wherever it is, you got to figure out how to fight the evils of greed, envy, jealousy, and all that stuff. If you can figure that out, you can play poker or any other kind of gambling. This is the greed gets you. So when I'm young, here I am looking at Doyle, got all this money, and my bankroll's like whatever it is, and I can't wait to double it. So I just go run and go over to him, and we'd play golf, and he was better than me, and I'd take a bad game. Like, I'd play him even when he should have been spotting me. You know what I mean? But the chance of me, he can only win X amount of dollars off me compared to what I could win off him was the, how you want to say it, the what drew me to it. I said, you know, if I can get lucky and beat this guy, I can beat him out of hundreds of thousands or millions, which eventually I did. I mean, I got it all back before we became partners. I mean, I got better, and he got older. And, you know what I mean? So that's how I got it back. Not that I outplayed him, it's just that age caught up with him. And, you know, and I was getting better, you know, just the fact that you just get better from when you first start playing golf to when you play a lot. And then, and after that, we joined partners. But I'll tell you one story about him, what he did to me one time. You'll enjoy this story. I had my bankroll built up to $98,000. I know that sounds like a weird number, but that's what it was. And I was still teaching school. I was making $6,100 a year. So Doyle, this is in the summer, he says he's going to Nashville to play a guy named Sam Sims in golf. So I played poker in Florida for 3 straight days. Hadn't had no sleep. Playing poker. And I get up in the morning and I get on a plane to go to Nashville to play golf. And Doyle picks me up at the airport. He said, we're going to the golf course. And I said, Dole, I can't go to the golf course. I haven't slept in 3 days. I got to get some sleep before I play you. He said, oh, come on out. You can ride around the golf cart and watch me play this guy, Sam Sims. I said, okay, I'll go out and watch. Well, anyhow, I could to make a long story short, he beat me out of the $98,000 to the penny that day, sent me home on an airplane that night, didn't even get to go to the hotel. Now I got to go back and start over again. Now I got to go back playing $5 and $10 poker because I'm completely broke. That's how things used to go in the old days.
Man. Now I heard also that about 10 years ago you got the yips and couldn't putt anymore. Can you tell us what happened there?
No, that's not true. Oh, yeah? Who told you that?
Oh, you know, it was Max.
Who?
Max Rubin? Yeah.
I know Max, but I don't know why Max would tell you that. I never gambled with Max. I mean, I know Max, but I don't think I ever played golf with Max. But anyhow, that's not true. Okay.
This
I still put anybody this day. Anybody wants to putt me, I'll still take them on.
All right. This show is being taped in late October, and it's going to air on November 10th. About the time it airs, the newest members of the Poker Hall of Fame will be announced. Now, Dewey is one of the 23 living members of the Hall of Fame, along with some media people. You're one of the voters for who's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Are you comfortable telling us who you voted for and why?
I'm not comfortable with that. It's supposed to be a secret ballot.
Okay. Yeah, but they have announced the winners. It's Jennifer Harmon and John Juanda.
Okay. All right. Well, I didn't know they announced the winners, but I voted for one of them. I did vote for Jennifer, but I voted for another. You get 10 points, and I spread it around. I voted for Jennifer. I think she should have been in there a long time ago. What's happening to the Hall of Fame is it's getting a little skimpy on who goes in there. You know what I mean? They're trying to put two people in there a year, and I think they're getting to where there's some players out there that, I don't know if it's the media, some good guys out there like Chow and John Hennigan or Ben Oldtime. I mean, they've been players forever. They don't even get nobody even mentions their name. You know what I mean? And they're way, way, way better players than the people that are being nominated. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
I think a lot of it has to do with how you get on there is, through the webs and all that stuff. You got a following, and people that don't know much about poker say, okay, this guy, they vote for you. You know, it's like voting for an all-star game on baseball, but they don't know who the good players are. You know, so it's kind of like to get your name up there, it's more like a media event to get up there than actual what you did as a poker player. You know what I mean? It's just getting to where, first of all, like next year, I think Phil Ivey's available. So that'd be fine, you know. They're getting to where they're almost reaching for somebody, you know, to try to find somebody to put in, which I don't think they should do that. And another thing I think they should do is they should go back to not only players, they should have categories. Like, there's some people out there that behind the scenes that need to be in there. You know what I mean? Just different people that whoever they are, like tournament directors, like Jack McClellan got in there last year, which was great. Some poker room managers have been managers for 50 years, like Doug Dalton, people like that. You know, people that really help poker more than somebody just going in and playing up, played in tournaments for 40 years and they really didn't do anything. You know what I mean? It's, I don't know. It's unusual how they pick them, but, or how do you get on that list? That's what I'm trying to get at. You know, I think it's just running out of people. I'll tell you, you know.
So I think every gambler fantasizes about what it would be like to own a casino, and but you actually did down in Costa Rica.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I'm always in some form of gambling, you know, and you know always looking to take, you know, how you want to say it. Everybody's looking for the best of it, and one thing about the casino, everybody that walks in the door got the worst of it. So you know. casino business is pretty good business. I mean, whoever walks in, whatever they play slots, craps, blackjack, they're taking the worst of it, and you're taking the best of it, so it's a good business.
So did you like owning the casino? Did you spend much time there?
Yeah, I was down there for about 10 years in Costa Rica, and the only problem with it was that when I was absent, I couldn't stop them from stealing. That's why I got rid of it. I mean, I had to either spend the rest of my life in Costa Rica, I sold it, or, you know, Costa Rica is a great place, but it's not like the United States. You know what I mean? So it's either stay down there, or if you were up here, you know, I just couldn't control the stealing, so it just wasn't worth my while, and the agony, you know what I mean? So that's why I sold it.
Yeah.
It's like any business. You got to be there. So I wasn't willing to be there, so that's how I got out. I was willing to be there for about 5 or 6 years, and then I wasn't. That's how simple it was.
Did you take a very long break from poker, or at least from Vegas? Was that to raise your kids, or?
Yeah, I got actually, in the end of 1985 or 86, they had these, you know, ratings out there, who's the number one player in the world, and I used to always get voted because, you know, whether I was or not, because I was winning tournaments in those days, so like number one seed. I won like 2 or 3 tournaments in a row, like Grand Prix of Poker, and then I won the Irish Centric Rating. Hey, I'll make a long story short. It's like I've talked to people that won the Super Bowl, the letdown. I got to my point in life where I thought, you're number one, everything, you're winning these tournaments, everything's great. And we would win these tournaments, I thought there would be a different kind of a feeling. I said, oh, boy, you know, gratitude. It was like an emptiness. Like I reached my goal to be the number one player, win all these tournaments, make money, and there wasn't no joy there. I said, look, this is what I'd spent my life at. I used to spend, like, you know, I didn't know who the President of the United States was for 20 years. I just played poker, you know, nonstop. So I said to myself, something hit me around 1986, whatever that was. And I said, you know what? This is what I'm spending my life at. It's not that thrill. It's like people, when they won the Super Bowl, they their whole life was to win it. And after they won it, it was like, this is the feeling I get. It's great, but it ain't enough. You know what I mean? You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not what I expected. So from that time on, I had 3 kids growing up, 3 boys growing up. And I said to myself, I just took off until I grew up. I went home, and I still played in the World Series of Poker every year, the main event. But I basically went home and raised my 3 kids. I made a lot of money. And I went back there, and I raised my kids, watched every baseball game, went to every practice, every game, until they got old. Once they grew out of high school, then I got back into poker about 2000 again for a little bit, you know. But I just realized that, you know, that, and I don't know if there, and I'm not saying the guys that play poker is right or wrong, what they do, and I was in it. But, you know, everybody makes a choice in life, what's more important. And I didn't have money, my choice would have keep playing poker and make money. You understand? But because I could, then I got to make it, I had a choice where I could say, okay, family's first, poker's on hold. So, you know, now if you, it's like anybody else. You got to work for a living. That comes first. You got to support your family. I was just lucky enough that I could do that. You know, all right.
How did you get so good again after that long break?
Well, I don't know if I got good again. I've never been a good player since I was. And I was 85 or 86. Never close. Once you quit playing, here's what I think a poker player has to do to be a good player. I think it's like almost like a golfer. You have to play every day, all day. You just can't. You just got to be there. It's the little things in poker where you make money. And like I got after I quit in '86, I just got worse and worse every year. You know what I mean? You just take it. You know, take 4 months off, a year off. You know, like right now, you know, when I play poker once a year, and I play the World Series of Poker, and I play about 3 days. You know, when I play 3, that's all I last. So as long as I last that day, that's. And then I go, you know, and I go till next year till I play again. So what happens to you is you don't have that feel. You don't have nothing. It's just like you look like you can play poker, but you really can't. You end up 3 hands later, you said, oh, shit, I should have check-raised that guy, or I should have called. You know what I mean? You got to play poker every day to have that poker mentality, that mental toughness. you can't get tired. Hell, I get after 2 hours, I'm ready to fall asleep at the table. It's just, you know, like a guy used to be able to run 5 miles, and he stopped running for 2 years, he can't run 5 miles again. You know, it's just something you gotta, to be a good player, you just gotta stay on top of it. So, and I'm not willing to sacrifice that to be a good player. To be a good player, you have to sacrifice time, play constantly, and I'm just not willing to do that anymore. So for me to become a good player again, I would have to do that. I'm not willing to put the time in.
Yeah. You came in second in the main event twice, and the mm-hmm. first time was against Jack Strauss. Mm-hmm. Was that the famous chip in a chair year where he was down to one chip and ended up winning?
That was it. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, actually, he moved all in and he left. And that wouldn't happen to this day in this day and age. But in that day, the rules were just being basically still formed. When he moved all in, he had a $500 chip under his napkin. They didn't see. So when he lost the pot, he got to stay in the tournament because he had the 500. Nowadays, they'd have probably said the 500 went in. You know what I mean? When he said all in.
Right.
You know. But actually, to tell you the truth, let me tell you.
That single chip to win the tournament mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Sort of famously said, all you need is a chip and a chair. Now, he was quite a character. Did you spend a lot of time playing against him?
Yeah, played golf every day. He was a degenerate gambler. He played golf, bet every sporting event, poker. His day was play golf in the morning, at every sporting event, play poker at night. That's all he did. And I played golf with him, and played poker at night with him. He was really a character. It couldn't be a minute a day that he wasn't gambling on something. That's just the way he was. Him and Stewie had a lot of the same traits.
Well, he must have been twice as big as Stewie, huh?
Do what?
Yeah, well, Stewie was little and Jack was pretty tall, so.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you a story about Stewie and Jack. You ready for this one? This is going to show you how much gamble these guys had in the old days. See, people in the old days had gamble. Maybe not smart gambling, but you had to prove to people you had gamble or they wouldn't gamble with you. So a lot of times you did crazy things that otherwise you couldn't get invited to a poker game or you couldn't get in a golf game. If you say, okay, this guy, only time he wants to bet you is when he got the nuts, people would stay away from you. You had to show people you had gamble. So people used to do crazy things like flip a coin. I flipped a coin for $50,000 before. You know what I mean? So just to show a person that I had gamble. We'd make a golf match, and I'd say to them, they'd be saying, I won 5 shots, they won 3 shots. And I'd say, listen, you don't want to gamble. So let's just golf. Let's just flip a coin for $50,000. I wanted to see if that guy had gamble. He'd say, no, I know he ain't got gamble. He wants the best of it. You know what I mean? He said, yeah, I know this guy's willing to gamble. Now we can go gambling. But anyhow, Stewie's watching me play golf one day for a lot of money. And so I used to putt between my legs, which is illegal on the tour, but that's how I putted it. I don't know whether you knew that or not. It was an illegal putting stroke, but that's how I putted it for gambling. And anyhow, so make a long story short, Stewie's out there watching me putt, and he said, boy, that looks easy. So he tried it once. So at the turn, after 9 holes, where I go in to get a Coca-Cola, I come out to find Stewie. He's out putting Jack Strauss. He's putting between his legs. Stewie's never been on a golf course at this time. He's putting between his legs, and Jack Strauss is putting one-handed. You know what I mean? And they're betting. Within 5 minutes, Jack beat him out of $70,000 before I could get him away from him.
So wow.
They were playing like $10,000 a hole, where Jack would putt with one hand, and Stewie, which never been on a golf course, was trying to putt between his legs because it looked easy. And anyhow, make a long story short, it didn't take but 5 minutes to beat him out of $70,000. So that's how Strauss was. Strauss was always looking for a little edge like that. So.
Now, when you're golfing, if like you're a scratch golfer and I'm somebody who can't break 100, for the right kind of handicap, we could actually have a fair gamble. But
here's how we do it. We do a little different. I don't believe in giving strokes away. I'll just use that as an example, but okay. So somebody can relate to it. But strokes are bad. I mean, you got a guy that's got a stroke and he got a two putt from 4 feet because he got a stroke. What we do is we put people, there's a certain place on the golf course. I play most of my matches distances. I find somewhere that the match is equal. Like, I play people from 150-yard markers. I play the back tees, they play 150-yard markers, but there's no strokes involved. Or they play the 200-yard marker. Like, when I played Dole, the last times I played Dole, he'd play the ladies' tees, and I'd play the pro tees when he got older. It's ways of making people have to putt out. You know what I mean? It's a place on that golf course that everybody's equal. It might be at the 150-yard marker, it might be the 200, it might be the 250, it might be the same set of tees. But, you know, that's how we do it. That way you don't have to give strokes. Like, give an example. When I play a tour player, and I used to play a lot of them, what I would do is, the match was, I know you might not understand this, they would play the back tees, I would play the next tees up, and they always thought they had the nuts, but they didn't. I would play them even, but we didn't play the par fives. That was my stand-in match with all those guys. No par fives, because I couldn't hit it far enough to, they could lock on two, and I couldn't. And I played them even. They thought they were robbing me because we're playing even. But we wasn't playing the par fives where they make up all their ground, and I was getting about a 40-yard tee spot. So it became a pretty even match, you know. I don't know if you understand all that or not. Are you guys golfers?
Yeah. Well, I understand it.
Yeah. Okay.
But it comes down to putting, and at least somebody said that if they had to have a putt for his life, he would pick you as the guy who was putting for him.
Yep, I've heard that a few times, yep. I've had a lot of experience at it. Most people haven't had a putt for me. I mean, there's not many people out there that putted for $1 million, you know, for one hole, one stroke. So, I mean, you have to have a little bit of experience at it. So I imagine those tour players could do it. I don't think they could do it the first time. I think eventually they, when I gamble with some of those guys, they're so good, eventually, excuse me, they would figure it out. But the first couple of times they putt for their own money, hit the ball for their own money, that they don't do too good. Not all of them. It depends on their personality. Some do good, some don't. A lot of it's your personality. Some people love the challenge. Some people... You know, like when I first started playing golf, I told you I was the biggest goose, a big sucker playing golf the first 2 or 3 years. But I finally figured it out. But in the beginning, I used to choke with the best of them, buddy. I'd putt and just jump off like I was putting fadeaway jumpers. I'd be so nervous. But you figure it out. So what happens to a regular golfer, even though he can putt out there on the golf tour, where if he wins, if he makes his putt, he wins $300,000. If he misses, he still makes $200,000. It's a big difference if he misses that putt, $500,000 out of his own pocket. It's tough to putt that putt. You got to have some experience, and you got to have some nerves, and you just got to know how to do it. You just got to figure out how to do it. That's why I putt between my legs. I couldn't do it to the side. I figured out I had to do it to my legs.
Now, did you eventually have to learn to putt the other way? Because, or did nobody? I mean, do they allow you to putt that way still?
Yeah, that's part of gambling rules. I have a patent on gambling rules. I didn't make the gambling rules, but when I had that. There's a guy named Sam Sims used to come out. He's called, we have gambling rules in golf where you don't touch the ball anywhere under any circumstances. I mean, you can putt between your legs. We use grease, many clubs you want. I carry 40 clubs in my bag. I got one for every occasion. We can use grease. We don't drop the ball. Like if you're on a cart path, you have to hit it. You're in plugs, you're in mud puddles, you hit it. We don't touch it. And the reason we don't touch it, there's too many arguments. Usually playing against your friends. But Benny Binion used to say this. You got to gamble with your friends because your enemies don't come around. So we usually gamble with somebody you know. Or you gamble with them all your whole life. So, you know, you play one hole and he wants to drop. You give it to him. Next hole you want to drop and he don't give it to you. Before you know it, you got a fist fight out there over, you know what I mean? So the rules are you don't touch it under any circumstances until you get on the green. That's how simple it is.
Now, what if
and
it's in
that
the
way
water?
You don't get no arguments or no fight. Well, you still play rules. You hit it in the water out of bounds. You play golf rules. I'm talking about actual, if it's in play, you can't touch it. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, in other words, if you hit the ball out of bounds, you tee it, and you hit the ball in the water, you got to drop it. But the ball, the actual ball, you can't touch it. Like, you can't, you know, if you're in a plug lie, you got to hit it. If you're in a mud putter, you got to hit it. Under any, you just can't touch it. You can't say, "Oh, do I get a drop because there's an ant coming?" You just, or if you're on a snake, you just got to wait till the snake leaves, I guess. Sprinkler head, you hit it. Well.
So who was, of all those old-timer guys that you used to play with, who was the one that stands out as the craziest or the most outrageous? Or?
Well, the biggest gambler and the best gambler of all time is Doyle, no matter what, whether it's poker, golf. I mean, he's by far, how you want to say it, Michael Jordan of basketball, you know what I mean? He's there's nobody even close to him. They can talk about Billy or me or anybody. Nobody's even in his category. I mean, Billy played high a little bit, but not like Doyle. Doyle played, hell, that time he played Chagra. Did they ever tell you what the match was with Chagra?
No.
This was like a $3 or $4 million match. It was the highest one. He was playing Chagra. $250,000 Nassau. 36 holes, one down automatics, $125,000 every hole automatic. And, you know, bottom line was going to be about $3 or $4 million. But that's how Doyle's played higher than anybody. Nobody's played higher than Doyle, you know, throughout the years. But, I mean, Carrick, now, as far as craziness, I mean, Chagra was pretty crazy. Stewie lost. I must have been. We beat Stewie out of so much money on the golf. Stewie lost on the golf course. Well, there's always somebody has to lose.
Yeah, I heard when Stewie first started playing, they would let him throw the ball once a hole. Like he would.
They do everything, anything. They let him throw it. They put him on a wooden tee. He used to have a tee. So when he hit in the water, he just tee up. He had about a foot long. He'd pound it and hit it off it. But I'll tell you another story about Stewie. You'll enjoy this. This is how crazy gambler is. This is the World Series of, the golf thing again. Jack Vigna's golf. So Stewie, when he first started, bets all this money he can break 120. It's like, you know, maybe $500,000 or $600,000. Bets everybody 10, 20. He's going to go shoot 120. So we go to the Old Sahara Golf Course, and there must be 50 or 60 of us gamblers, you know, all around the first tee waiting to tee off. Stewie whiffs the first eight shots.
First eight.
Just run everybody. He whiffs the first eight shots. He's all, well, we all screwed up, you know, on dope and all. You know, he's crazy. He whiffs the first eight shots. Everybody's roaring on the floor laughing. He's accusing everybody of taking weights out of his clubs. You know, you bet my club, you took the weight out of the club. He's screaming. Naturally, he didn't win the bet. That was dumb days or something. I used to go play golf. I'd come out. I'd have a 5-wood bent like a bow and arrow. Somebody'd get to it. You know what I mean? They'd pay somebody to go bend it on you. Them were the days, buddy. Now everybody, you used to go play poker. I remember going to play poker in Dallas. I used to fly to Dallas to play poker in the early 70s. It'd be a 10-handed poker game. And you didn't have no dealers in that time. Everybody dealt their hand. Well, five of the hand, you couldn't even play. I mean, five guys be cold decking you, dealing your cards. So you, no matter what you got, you had to throw your hand in every other hand. I mean, the things are brutal in them days. Now, the casinos protect you, which is great. I mean, it's clean, nothing happens. But them new guys don't know what the old timers used to have to go through. And then if you won, you had to worry about getting to your car before somebody robbed you.
I mean, it was brutal. I think I read a story about you getting robbed in the bathroom, and then the guy was out gambling.
That was Dickie Carson. That wasn't me. Yeah. Dickie Carson was in Dallas, the same thing. A big old rough place. He went to the restroom. A guy come in there and says, "I hate to do this to you. He said, Dickie, but I got to rob you." And Dickie said, he just stole the money up under the, he was in there, going a bit under the stole, and I just got to do it. I hate to do it. So Dickie finally gets done. He runs out. The guy robbed me. He started yelling, "Robbed me!" And there's a guy playing at the table with the money. So he shut up because the guy was an old hitman. He was going to kill him. That was Dickie. Dickie was crazy. Dickie hired. This perfect example of how the old timers was. Dickie was made a lot of money. He made about $30 million. In a couple of years out there. he broke it. I mean, he lost it all back. But he had a little league baseball team, and when Yogi Berra got fired from the Mets, you guys remember that at all? A long time ago. Anyhow,
long time ago.
Yeah. Dickey actually called Yogi Berra up there. We're going to pay him $150,000 to manage his baseball team, Little League baseball team. Wait a minute, this is not funny. Yogi turned him down. But listen to this. Dickey did a lot of good things for the community. He had a thing called, I think they still have it, it's called Las Vegas Gold. It's a swim team out there. And Dickey used to, Dickey had his kids was on the swim team. You remember Roddy Gaines? Roddy Gaines won him 6 or 7 Olympic gold medals. He's a swimmer.
Yes.
Okay. So Dickey, after he wins all these gold medals, usually people go out there and they get on commercials and make all this money and, you know, be an announcer. Nobody hears of Roddy Gaines. What Dickey did was he paid him some ridiculous figure, like $1 million or $2 million a year, to be the coach of the Las Vegas Gold.
Wow.
Swim team. And guess where they had their party? You know, most people would go to a party. This is how crazy Dickey was. You asked me about crazy people. He went through this $30 million pretty quick. But when most people have a swim team, like a Little League team, you go to McDonald's or, you know, a Pizza Hut to have your party. He had his, I forget the name of the place, in Caesar's Palace, $250,000 swim team party. I had to go to it. Let me tell you how silly it was. He had... He brought in all these swimmers. You know, like you pay him $5,000 to speak, you know what I mean, and guests and everything like that. So the thing's going on. He wanted everybody to, you know, he paid him $5,000 to give a speech, so everybody had to give their own speech. About 1:30 at night, there it is, all these kids all sleeping on the aisle, sleeping on the floor. They got to go to school the next day. Dickey, guys are still giving speeches. Oh, it was hilarious. But then, he was a beauty. That one was a beauty. Yeah, he's still around, but he went through that $30 million, and that's a lot of money to get in those days. You know, that was probably in the early '80s. That's the guy Billy used to play him heads up poker all the time. Billy ever tell you about playing a guy heads up poker all the time? Billy beat him out of a lot of money. He used to play heads up deuces 7 every night, but Billy probably got most of it. And Billy's been around a long time, but guys like. Billy has been around a long time. Doyle, most of the guys, that's another reason I don't play as much as I don't even have. Doyle's still around, but when I go there, I don't even know anybody anymore. You know, all the old-timers like Puggy, the characters I really enjoyed playing with, like Iron Man, Puggy, Strauss, you know, they're all dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, it used to be a social event when you played poker. Even though you're trying to beat your friends out of their money, it still was a social event. Everybody had fun. They tell jokes, and I remember I beat guys out of money, and I'd loan it back to them. You know, that's how we did things in those days. Loan it back to them, and you know how we did it. It was fun. Now, when you go to a poker table, I mean, you can't even get nobody to say hi to you. I walk into those tournaments, and you know, half of them are you know Europeans, or they don't even talk. The only time they talk is about after about. 3 hours. If the dealer makes a mistake, they go, "Oh, dealer, poor man!" You know, they start screaming. Guys got headphones in. They got computers in front of them. Nobody's paying attention. When they want to go to lunch, like you say to me, to you, or I say, "Hey, at the break, let's go have a coffee or something," they text it. They don't even ask. It's like you know, it's like being at a zombie table. You know, it's just, it's not much fun. I don't know how to describe it to you. Like the old days, I guess I was spoiled because everybody's a character. Now everybody's. You know, there are people that are, a lot of them don't speak English. First of all, you can't talk to them. Some of the kids have been, they spend, you know, months at a time playing internet poker. They don't have no social skills. They can't learn how to talk. So it's just not much fun at the poker table like it used to be. You know what I mean? It's probably the biggest thing I miss. So that's why I don't enjoy it. So why play something you don't enjoy, you know?
Yeah.
But you've done it for something like 40 years in a row. You've made every... main event since the mid-70s. If you're not enjoying it, why are you still doing it?
Well, I do it once a year. I go out to see the people. Well, I say I don't enjoy it. I mean, I wouldn't enjoy doing it all the time. That's what I meant. I'm sorry. I wouldn't want to do that every day of my life, going to a table and not having fun. That's what I meant by that. Going to the World Series of Poker, I always enjoy that. You know, that's like a very unique experience. I meant like making it a daily, you know, I don't know if you guys play poker or not, but, you know, you have your own local poker game. Everybody's a character. They're telling jokes. You're having fun. Like that anymore. That's what I meant by it. You got to enjoy your work. It's fun for me to go out there now. Are you there?
Yeah.
Yes. When the main event, when like Doyle gets busted out when he still played, everybody would give him a standing ovation because he's such an all-time.
Right.
Now, you're not quite the category of Doyle, but you're a legend too. Do they give you a big standing ovation when you lose?
Well, the ones at the table, they don't give me a stand. I don't know if anybody gets a standing ovation but Doyle. I don't think anybody does. I mean, the guys at my table, half of them don't even know me because I haven't been there. I don't, you know, like Doyle still plays poker, you know, so I mean, it's been like quite a few years since I've played any serious poker. So most, a lot of times, you know, the young guys, they don't even know me. Some of them do, but, you know, they don't speak, so. I mean, they'll congratulate you like everybody else does when you get knocked out, but I haven't got no standing ovations lately, which is good. I usually just sneak out. I'm a little bit more like low key. I don't go into that anyhow. I'd probably be embarrassed getting one.
You know, we're almost out of time, but I just wanted to say, Blair says that you have the nicest sports bar he's ever been in his life. So you want to tell us where that is and what the name of it is?
It's Dewey's Indoor Golf. It's right here in Orlando. In fact, I'm in it right now. Yeah, I got I got a lot of businesses, restaurants, and, you know, that's what I do now. I'm more like, it's not as much fun going to business meetings as it is playing poker. But, you know, it's something I do. It's Dewey's Indoor Golf. It's in Orlando, right across from Universal Studios. And it's really unique. It's like 12,000 square foot sports bar with golf simulators, you play any sporting event, you know, something different. I think it's a new thing coming up. You know, people, it's an alternate. Nobody's ever going to replace going outside and playing golf. It's an alternative, like nighttime, people to work all day, rainy days, cold days in the winter up north. You can still play golf, you know.
Yeah.
And to go back to the thing about the 40 straight days, why I keep going, they got the record. And guess what happens when I die?
So, somebody else will be having the record.
No, my kids are going to go there and put the 10,000 in every time until I get to 100. So after I die, keep entering me in the tournament so nobody can beat the record. That's one record I'm going to get. Helmut ain't going to get that record.
We're out of time, Dewey. It has been a pleasure listening to you. Thank you very much for coming on the show with us.
Come see me in Orlando.
Thank you, Dewey.
Very good. We will.
Bye-bye.
All right. So we were talking to Dwayne Dewey Tomko, golf legend, poker legend, lots of good stories. That was fun.
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.